Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot. Hey everyone, my name is Brianna Contreras, and I'm Associate Editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. In this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite, I spoke with Manik Bhatt, founder and CEO of Healthify, a company that works with managed care organizations to integrate social determinants of health into the healthcare ecosystem. Manik and I spoke about how the need to address social determinants of health has changed since the COVID-19 pandemic began, and what the importance of addressing these social and economic issues are during and after the pandemic. We also touched on how social determinants of health contribute to the spread of viral diseases and how they worsen the issues for individuals already struggling. Hello, Manik. How are you doing today?
Hey, good. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Thank you for joining us for an episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite.
Of course, happy to be here.
All right. Well, to first start off, can you first just tell our listeners what it is that you do and what's the mission of Healthify?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, maybe it's, I'll start at the beginning so folks have understand a little bit of context. So I'm the CEO and co-founder here at Healthify. I got my start doing community health work in East Baltimore. And if folks know the East Baltimore community, it's a community with quite a bit of need. And I was working with a group called Health Leads at a pediatric clinic. And I was doing work at volunteering work at a community psychiatry clinic and a small men and family shelter. And I was primarily working with high needs Medicaid families. And what I saw day in and day out was that the biggest needs families had were primarily social needs, food, housing, childcare, employment, access to transportation. And on the ground, working with families and running programs with different volunteers, it was very difficult to support families and get them access to appropriate services. And it was really through that frustration, Healthify was born, kind of recognizing that social determinants drive majority of health, really impact the ability for a family to thrive in their own community. And the systems and tools and technology and incentives we have to really address those needs were really broken. So we set out to say, hey, if we are serious about value-based care and improving population health as the healthcare industry evolves, and if we're serious about building stable, thriving communities, we got to get serious about how we address the social determinants of health in the communities we live and serve. So that's really the genesis of Healthify and really core to our mission. It's how do we build a world where no one's health is hindered by their social needs?
Okay, great. Thank you. Now, before I get into, I guess, again, like more of your experience, which you talked about a bit, can you first share what communities Healthify serves?
Yeah. So we've been very proud we've been at it for 7 years now, and we've scaled across the country, serving about a million families over these past couple of years, deployed in every state. Our genesis and our start was primarily in urban communities where the need was quite high. But over the past 2-3 years, we've scaled to rural settings and really seeing how the need changes and the dynamics of needs change in community to community. So and also when you think about it in the framing of the current pandemic, which is shining a bright light on these needs, we're seeing communities that previously did not have acute social needs now have them because of the impacts of COVID-19. So we feel like the time is now to really build the right type of infrastructure and incentives to address these needs long-term, because the capacity for these services is low and the demand continues to increase. So we're in the mode of really serving wherever there's need.
Okay, great. Now, for my next question, I guess it kind of ties into what I originally wanted to ask. So originally you said you found this need when you were working in East Baltimore, correct?
Right, that's right, okay. Yeah.
So if you can share maybe, I guess, just what you noticed that need was in Baltimore specifically, and maybe if you could share like maybe the differences of rural communities to more urban communities.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, one way to think about this is you always hear the refrain, zip code matters more than your genetic code, right? And, the numbers I always like to share are, the place where I worked in Baltimore, if you went two zip codes to the right, the difference in life expectancy was about 20 years. Dramatic, dramatic difference. And a lot of that was due to a lot of the needs we saw. And we would interact with families and they would share how they're having trouble paying for food by the end of the month, having issues with utilities being shut off, trying to find childcare for their kids, trying to get a stable job, trying to enter an adult education, trying to be a better caregiver with caregiver risk and stress increasing. So the needs were always varied, but the pain point was one, we knew we didn't know all the needs that a family had because the process wasn't in place to identify needs. We didn't know what services could help effectively, and we'd be calling and trying to figure that out. And we didn't know if the service was actually helpful. There was no connection point between healthcare and social services. So multiple points of breakdown from identification to coordination of care to following up to make sure did the service treat that family with dignity? Did it actually help? So that's one whole layer of problem areas. And then when we think about the kind of the issues of incentives, what we also recognized was there are not enough dollars flowing to community organizations to make sure the services are actually available. And that's one big difference between urban and rural settings. We've seen the needs be just as high in rural settings, but the services are not there. The density of services aren't there. When we take an area like New York City, which has a really robust social services infrastructure, and we compare it to some of our work in Kansas, we can very clearly see, hey, the food need is really high in a 15-mile radius around Topeka. However, the amount of services that can help in that region is a lot lower. And we use that type of data to help inform our health plan partners where they might want to make investments. And ideally, long term, we see this as a great way to build a policy case to invest more in these services and hopefully change how we reimburse for social services to increase capacity. But that's one big difference we see is in certain rural settings, the services aren't there.
Right. Okay, great. Now this probably all ties together, but how has the need to address social determinants of health changed since the pandemic began? And then maybe what's the importance now, addressing it during and after COVID?
Yeah, it's had a
Probably
lot of
a big
impact.
question.
No, it's had a lot of impact. I mean, we can think about it in different stages. We look at it as quarantining began, what happened when quarantining was ending, what's happening now with the surge, what's happening in terms of long-term recovery. And there's different components to all of that in each part of that timeline and stage. But at a high level, as quarantining began, we saw a dramatic increase in primarily food and childcare needs. Some of the numbers we posted about this in our blog, but generally we're seeing about 18 to 25% of needs in our platform be food related, and then as quarantining began in the first 60 days, that skyrocketed to like 40%. So pretty dramatic increase. So you had this one trend line of demand for services increasing, but then you had the other trend line of capacity going lower, because you had a lot of these nonprofits and community agencies that do great work, but a lot of times they were relying on a senior citizen volunteer workforce that obviously had to stay at home and were at high risk to contract the virus. And you had a lot of community partners that lost some of their funding streams and didn't know how to operate in a non-face-to-face context. So you had a lot of community partners that had shut down or merge. So the capacity of these services was decreasing while the demand was increasing. So that was obviously two trend lines you don't want to see. Then we saw a lot of investment in the space. So we saw rapid response funds, COVID-19 funds in certain communities that try to fill the gaps in the hole and the holes. And that helped a bit, but still the food, childcare, housing needs, utility needs remained quite elevated and continue to remain elevated even now. So the fundamental issue that COVID-19 highlighted is the capacity for these services is not there. The infrastructure to connect families to these services is not there. And we know now, because the need was so pronounced, that we need to find ways to invest in communities to make sure that as the pandemic surges over the next few months, and hopefully as a vaccine comes in 2021, that we have some stability in the social services sector to make sure that families that are in the process of long-term recovery have access to the social support systems they need to thrive. So we're seeing a renewed interest, out in Q4 and into 2021 for healthcare organizations to really, pay attention to this and prioritize what they are going to do in this space. While the first two quarters, people were just wrapping their heads around, what does this mean?
Right.
And now we're seeing more folks say, okay, now we understand what needs to be done. Let's go do it.
That's good. Yeah, very good. Now, can you share why are certain populations more prone to COVID-19, and what populations are those, which you may have touched on a bit already, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to, there are a couple of ways to look at this, right? One is looking at what are the trends we see in healthcare access and utilization? And we know that folks from some racial and ethnic minority groups are more likely to be uninsured than non-Hispanic whites, and healthcare access is usually limited for those groups based on lack of transportation, access to childcare, ability to take off time off work, communication and language barriers. There's a host of things that we can talk about just looking at the vantage point of healthcare access and utilization, and you know, putting even aside the historical discrimination in the healthcare system. So, and even putting aside the concept of cultural competency and trust with healthcare systems in certain ethnic minority groups. So there's a ton of things here that lead to poor access and utilization, which means that if someone is sick, they're less likely to seek care, which impacts how we think about diagnosing if someone has COVID-19 and impacts the spread. So that's one big bucket. Mm-hmm. The second big bucket we can think about is work and occupation. And we also know that minority groups are disproportionately represented in essential work settings, whether it be healthcare, factories, grocery stores, public transit. A lot of the occupations that are increased chance of exposure for COVID-19 due to several factors. And also those types of industries have really poor ability to work from home, really poor ability for paid sick days. So there's this overlay of poor healthcare access plus occupations that don't provide the flexibility to take care of yourself and your family in an effective way. And it's, you know, two variables you don't want to see. And then finally, look at housing. Right. And we know that in certain communities that there's high crowded conditions. And when you think about even certain minority groups and cultures, it's really common for family members for many generations to live in a singular household. So that also impacts these variables, too. Putting even aside the impact on eviction and homelessness as quarantining began. So there's a ton of variables at play that unfortunately impact racial and ethnic minority groups far more than others. Mm-hmm. And it builds a recipe where folks are more likely to contract the virus and less likely to be get the care they need to recover. So that's at a high level how we think about it.
Okay. And that response kind of ties into my next question of how, you know, these economic and social conditions are contributing to the spread of viral diseases. So I guess if you can share how they contribute, but how do they worsen the issues for individuals already struggling?
Yeah, I mean, it's just another, you know, when we think about it, the rates in certain communities for African Americans, as an example, in especially here in New York, is substantially higher than anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And when you lay that on top of all the other variables that are at play that allow someone to thrive in their life, it's just another negative hit. And when we think about how do we invest in recovery, how do we roll out the vaccine, how do we increase healthcare access, how do we make sure that when we are rolling out additional testing programs that they're directed and prioritized in the appropriate areas, I think we have to have a clear lens on what communities are disproportionately affected to really do those things correctly and roll them out in the appropriate way. So, you know, even now I live out here in Queens in New York, and it's still difficult to get a test in any reasonable timeframe, and you're waiting in line for hours. And it's just not the effective way to make this stuff work.
Okay. Thank you. Now, what is Healthify doing to at least again, provide or help provide these services, you know, to those people in need?
Yeah, I mean, so we do a lot. So, you know, putting aside COVID, the core of what we do is we connect families to these social services via a network of community partners and a technology platform.
Okay.
And we deploy that in healthcare settings. We deploy that with health plans. We deploy that with community partners. In the era of COVID-19, though, what we've done is I'll give some examples. You know, out in Kansas City and in Topeka, we had helped distribute some COVID funds for utility vouchers and home delivered meals for folks who are diagnosed positive with COVID-19, and try to put all these pieces together of how do you get food delivery done in this environment very quickly, mm-hmm. with food banks that have excess supply because they haven't been able to deliver food in person, and make sure they're getting to the right folks and resourced appropriately. So there's been some unique innovation coming out of how to actually operate in this time and how to be creative and solve for problems on the fly. Other things we've done are, you know, in the early days, we were sharing a lot of our data with folks so they could better understand how to prioritize recovery. And we had also shared online a list of services for folks to use during this time. And then also for community partners that were, you know, struggling, what areas they could seek funds from. So giving them a list of ways they can get more additional funding in kind of the critical time for them and their survival. So we've tried to do a couple of things here to try to put all these pieces together, but there's still a ton more work to be done.
Of course, thank you. And that's actually, you know, all I had for you, but if there's any other additional information you'd like to share about Healthify or just addressing social determinants of health during this time or anything else I did not ask.
Yeah, no, thank you. No, I feel like if we're hiring quite a bit right now. So if folks would like to join us on this journey in a time where I think it's even more important, especially with the changing administration that we feel is going to drive more policy in this space, thankfully, recommend reaching out to us and having a conversation and a dialogue. We'd love to have you join us, and we're excited about the next year.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.